The Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 Ultra has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. Every man knows how scary it can get when going for a close shave below the belt. That's why I trust Manscaped for all my sensitive areas. Inside this package, you'll find the star of the show, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Their fifth generation trimmers features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. We also have dual LED spotlights to provide contrast on multiple skin tones, three length setting combs, and oh, did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? Beach, lake, shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Now that you have the perfect haircut, use Manscaped's liquid formulations to keep that freshness even at the hottest summer barbecues. The Crop Soother, aftershave lotion and crop preserver, anti-chafe ball deodorant. Once they touch your sack, you'll never go back. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 5.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. More wet products? Say no more. Manscaped's new Buff Bundle is all you need to keep the summer heat a breeze. The bundle includes their signature silicone scrubber and body wash. Ditch your nasty loofah and grab a taste of freshness.
All aboard! Let's do that hockey.
You're listening to Dopper Prospects Report, report number 81. I'm your host, Peter Harling, and with me this week is not Victor Nuno. He's on assignment again, so filling in is producer Jim Icavone. Jim, how you doing, bud?
Doing great. A lot of hockey to get to. You've been to some games. I've been to a couple games here, and excited to talk some hockey with you once again, Peter.
Yeah, man. It's good to get into the rinks, right? I was saying just to you before we started recording here how it's nice being able to go to the games and watching the junior hockey and the AHL. And I really, I do this not for the money or any other reason other than I'm literally scouting for my fantasy teams. I use the media credentials to get access for fantasy league scouting. And that means I have to share it with other people to make it totally legit. But that's totally what I'm doing, man.
If you're getting the best experience, right? Like you're getting the up close and personal look before anybody else can get it.
Yeah. So, I'm formulating my own opinions about some players. It's really great.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about some of those guys. But before we do, we got some business to take care of. This episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow HockeyPodNet for more great hockey podcasts, and you can use the DraftKings promo, THPN, for listening to this show. Thank you very much. We'll talk about that in a bit. We are also proudly sponsored by Fantrax. It's the ultimate league manager for any dynasty sport you play. It's completely customizable for however you want to set up your league, from scoring categories, an amazing draft room to host your draft. It's got draft pick tracking, which is a huge feature for me, and a treasury option as well. It's so much, much, much more you can use on Fantrax. I don't know why anyone would consider using anything else. It's all we use. And you can use our promo code if you want to try out Fantrax for a free league using this link, fantrax.com/DPR show. All right, James. So, like you said, we've both been to a couple of games in the last week. And so this episode is going to be dedicated towards our scouting report notebook. And for the first game of the week we're going to talk about is an AHL game that I went to in Belleville where they hosted Laval. So Laval's got some pretty good prospects on their roster. Montreal was ranked the fourth overall team in the last Dauber Prospects organizational rankings, which is a pretty high grade. There's a bunch of guys that were ranked in there that are not playing for Laval because they're in the NHL, like Slavkovsky and Hudson. Ryan Backer is injured, so that was disappointing. I didn't get to see him. Some other guys are in Europe or whatever, but there's a lot of players that we ranked that are playing for Laval right now. So I got a really good look at the Montreal Canadiens prospect pipeline. In terms of guys that were in the Dauber Prospects, top 15 prospects that were in this game, I saw Owen Beck, who is ranked fourth, Joshua Roy, who was ranked sixth, Sean Farrell was seventh,
Logan Mayu was 11, and Adam Engstrom was 15. Okay, so these rankings that I'm referring to, Jim, were months ago, and they're a consensus rankings from about, oh, just over a half a dozen of the Dauber prospects and draft writers, and Dauber himself contributed to it too. So these are consensus rankings. But based on what I saw at this game in Laval, that rankings would have to be restructured significantly. Without any question, the adjustments would be as follows, as far as I'm concerned. Logan Mayu, then Josh Wye, or Waugh, then Adam Engstrom, then Owen Beck, and last Sean Farrell. That's kind of how I saw it. That's how they lined up on the depth chart for the rosters for the game, and that's how impactful and valuable they seem to be for the team. Pretty close rankings, though. I mean, we scored Beck, the highest one was a 6.1, and Josh Wye was a 5.4. Farrell was a 5.1. That seems generous. Logan Mayu was a 3.7. I'll kind of touch on that a little bit. And Adam Engstrom was the last ranked guy at a 2.1. So these are like at a 0 out of 10 average scores here. So a 5 indicates like a player that's about a 50-50 shot of making it to the NHL. So I think Logan Mayu at 3.7 is like almost inverted. It should be closer to 7.3. And Owen Beck at 6.1 with Josh Wye should have been reversed as well. But let's start with Logan Mayu. He's the guy I think was most interesting in this. He's 34% Fantrax rostered. He played top pairing minutes and played the part well. He played big minutes for them. He was their number one defenseman for sure. He's got a lot more size than I recall from watching him in junior with London, and he uses it pretty well. He's got a really long reach. Like, there was a number of times where he was defending and used his stick and his reach to intercept passes and disrupt lanes and plays that I didn't think were options for him based on his positioning. But yeah, like he was reaching like right around guys and taking pucks off them from behind and stuff. Pretty impressive. He carries the puck with confidence. Like, he is oozing confidence at the AHL level, and he's running the power play for them too, right? He's set up on the point. He's going from side to side, switching sides and passing the puck down low, looking for the relay to the bumper, or he's taking the shot if it's there. And he's got a really good shot, man. Like, he can unleash. Not sure if I see, you know, future power play quarterback potential him at the NHL level. It seems pretty clear that that position is being catered to Lane Hudson, and I think he is going to own it for a long time because that kid just oozes offense. If Lane Hudson's on your roster, he's running your power play, or you shouldn't have him on your roster. But Logan Mayu's off to a really hot start too. He's making the most of the ice time that he's getting. He's got 3 goals and 7 assists, so 10 points in 6 games. He's a defenseman. Like, he is driving the offense there. I've not been very interested in Logan Mayu in the past, though. Like, since his criminal incident in his draft year, I'm sure we can all remember that, or you can look it up if you don't. Just one of the many recent scars on Hockey Canada. But off ice issues aside, he's looking like a steal, like a real beauty of a player. And Montreal's selection of him at the time was extremely controversial because, you know, he was either facing criminal charges or convicted of criminal charges and said, "Please don't draft me." Like, he felt shame and didn't feel like he deserved to be drafted in the NHL. And you know, most teams passed on him, and it looked like he was going to get overlooked. And then Montreal went all in at pick 31 on him and got him late in the first round. And looking at that draft, if you take his off-ice issues aside, right, like pretend they never happened, he obviously would have been picked a lot higher. And I'm sure Columbus and Minnesota, who select Carson Kuhlmans and Carson Lambos over him well in advance, like 15 picks sooner, would like a do-over on that if they could. So I wonder now how many folks got similar fantasy value in their dynasty drafts because of that, right? Like, I know he was on my do not draft list because, you know, I didn't feel good about having a guy with that criminal conviction and his record on my fantasy roster. Like, I know I'm not selling tickets to fans and I don't have a fan base to answer to. But it's just, I just didn't feel good about it. Plus, he was drafted by Montreal and I grew up a Leaf fan, so that made it easy.
Oh, there you go.
So anyways, Logan Mailloux, I think he's looking like a surefire top four NHL defenseman. There's a lot about this kid who's, his game that I really like. And, we talked a lot about a couple other players on this podcast with Victor particularly, about mistakes that these kids make when they're kids, and I think about when I was that age and, I had some pretty embarrassing opinions, things that I'm ashamed of, and I did and said some things that I'm ashamed of, and I've grown as a person, and I'm not thinking that way anymore. I've matured and I'm a very tolerant and accepting person now. So, I like to think that, maybe this kid just needs a second chance, like maybe he was just, I don't know what he was thinking when he did what he did, but let's hope that he's learned from his mistake and he's a better person now and would never do anything like that again, and has a really nice hockey career and is a contributing valuable fantasy hockey player. What are your thoughts on Mailloux or any of the things that I just said about him?
Yeah, so he kind of is one of those guys where, you want to talk about him as a hockey player, but you almost feel like you can't talk about the hockey stuff until you acknowledge, the mistakes he made as a person. So, like you said, I'm of the belief, everybody deserves a second chance within reason, right? And I just had to go kind of refresh on what happened in his past there. And, like you mentioned, we're all kids at some point. We all make mistakes, some bigger than others. You just have to hope that, he really is sorry and he really has learned from what he did, because, as a kid at such a young age with all that talent and skill and such a bright hockey future in front of him, you want him to kind of learn his lesson and be a better human being going forward, so that I guess you can see him continue on his hockey career, and make a positive impact on and off the ice. So I feel like you have to acknowledge that before you get to his hockey stuff here. And as a prospect, at least for me, he's an extremely exciting prospect. These are the guys that I love to watch. He's you mentioned he put on some size. He's listed 6'3" on HockeyDB, so he's a bigger guy, right-handed shot. He's putting up points as a defenseman in the AHL, and this is his second season with, how do you say it? Is it Laval or Laval or Laval?
Laval.
Laval, okay.
That's how I say it anyways, but
Yeah,
I say a lot of things wrong.
I'm gonna say it like that too. Yeah,
I'm sure they say it
Dweagle.
different in Quebec than we do in Ontario too.
Right, and I want to make sure I get it right for those in Quebec. So I'm a big fan of the player, Logan Mailloux, big right-handed defenseman with some offense to his game. He's got an extremely accurate shot, a big shot from the point too, which I love because I think it opens up the ice in the offensive zone when you're a defending player on the opposing team. You have to respect that big accurate shot. So you can't just say, we'll watch the guys along the wall and let this guy, toss his muffin at the net. You have to respect it. So it kind of spreads the ice a little bit. Big fan of Logan Mailloux, and you got to see him in person. I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, he was hard to miss. He's not only just because he's tall, but he was an impactful player. Now, the guy I was most interested in watching though was Josh Whye. Waugh. He is 24% Fantrax rostered. He was the best forward on either team, and he's leading Laval in scoring. He's got 7 goals and 5 assists, 12 points through 11 games. He's playing top line with Alex Barboulet, who we talked about last week on last week's episode with Victor. And Giganic or Gignac or whatever. So anyways, Waugh and Brulé had really good chemistry together. I really like the pace and speed that they played at. So Ra's 21 years old now. He's 6 foot 187, and I think he's pretty much physically done growing at this point. And he's got decent size, but he plays a pretty soft sort of perimeter game, right? Like he's not very physically aggressive. Not a hard forechecker. He relies a lot more on his hockey sense than physicality. But he's not a pushover either, right? Like he's pretty close to it, but he's not. You know, he can protect and defend the puck. He keeps his head up pretty good. So, you know, he wasn't getting abused physically. So it didn't seem like physicality was, it's certainly not a strength to his game, but it's not an asset and something that he brings to the table either. He does like to stick kind of more to the perimeter. He hovers around for pucks and interceptions and relies on his hockey sense to create turnovers and takeaways. And while that sounds really passive and unattractive, he's actually pretty successful at it. He's intercepted a lot of passes. He reads plays, takes away lanes. You know, so he doesn't have to knock and bowl guys over and be a wrecking ball out there. But he's a lot more cerebral in his defense and puck retrievals. He's a really quick thinker. He makes really quick passes. Like the puck is on and off his stick quickly, and so it creates space and time for other players and momentum. Nice one touch passes, sticks on pucks for the pass deflections, all really, really smart, heady plays. He's got a quick release of a shot too, and it's pretty good and accurate, but he seems to kind of favor more of a playmaker role. I'd say he's definitely a dual threat offensively. So I saw a lot of potential in Joshua Roy, and I think he's going to get a recall this season. 24% Fantrax rostership is pretty high for a player of his age and pedigree. So, you know, as there's a lot of fantasy rostering opportunity with this player, but in the deep leagues, he's mostly gone. Yeah, I think we're going to get a look at him in the NHL this season. Montreal is not competing this year. They're last overall, so maybe a few more injuries would be a reason to recall him and give him a cup of coffee and a little taste of the NHL and send him back and say you're trending in the right direction. This is where you're going. Keep it up. And then also kind of see how he handles the pace and physicality at the NHL level. So I'm really curious to see if he gets an audition this season. What's your take on Josh Warroy?
He's an intriguing prospect, isn't he? A former fifth round pick in 2021. So he's been around in the system for a little bit. This is his second season with Laval. He played 41 games last year and he got in 23 games with the Habs last season and scored 5 goals and picked up 5 assists. So
Yeah,
nine
not
points
bad, eh?
in 23 games. That's pretty solid for a rookie fifth round pick. What I'm getting out of this so far is the Habs have a pretty deep talent pool in terms of prospects here. We touched on Mayu already, and to me, we were talking about a guy that's going to be on the PP1, but of course, you know, you got Lane Hutson blocking him, and now we're talking about a fifth round pick in Joshua Waugh, who 12 points in 11 games this year with Laval, 7 goals, and another solid prospect for the Habs in their prospect pool.
Yeah, that's the thing with Montreal and their prospects, right? They got a lot of players, and I think I might have talked about this on a previous episode too. We've seen this in the past where teams have, like Los Angeles a few years ago, they had one of the best prospect pools in the league. They had a whole bunch of guys in their minor league system that, you know, online scouting community was all raving about. Los Angeles drafted a whole bunch of them, and only a few of them panned out, right? Like Samuel Fagemo, John Madden, those guys that were, you know, darlings of the scouting community haven't really turned out to be NHL players. And I think Montreal's going to be in a similar situation where they've got a lot of really interesting and intriguing prospects that people are excited about, and for good reason, but they're not all going to make it, certainly not in Montreal. So, you know, looking at Josh Roy, he's a right winger. So Caulfield and Anderson and Gallagher are the incumbents there, and they've got term. I think Josh Anderson might find his way out of the organization at some point. So then his prospect competition, Ivan Demidov, pretty sure he's going to make it. Jake Perreault, Philip Meschar, there's a couple of guys there that he's going to have to battle with, and or NHL players that he's going to have to kick them out of their job in order to find a roster spot. I don't really love him in a bottom six role because of the lack of physicality I talked about.
That's what I was going to ask you.
He's not ineffective, right? So there's a world where he could play in a bottom six role and provide supplementary offense as long as he's playing with, someone on the ice on the line that has some size. But we see guys like Kerfoot would be maybe a good comparable there. Like, he's not a top six guy and he doesn't have a lot of size, but he's got some speed, he's got some jam, he's a pretty smart player. He's good at possession and getting the puck back. So we'll see how it pans out for a while, but he's certainly a player, I think, at 24% Fantrax roster. You want to look him up in your league and see if he's available and see where he's going. As opposed to Owen Beck, who we ranked higher than Josh Roy in our Dobber prospects ranking. I can guarantee you that that's going to be reversed the next time this comes out. He was the second line center, though, for that game that I was at, playing with Farrell and Cimino. Quite frankly, Jim, he was pretty relatively invisible, like, all night long. He was hard to find, and I was looking for him. I think I had
While
his.
you were at the game, it's like you didn't know you were there or something.
Yeah, well, like I wrote my little notebook. I wrote down the lines and the numbers and the players, and then in the bottom half of the page, I've got the players that I'm watching, and he was near the top of the list, and I'm like,
Maybe he was nervous. Maybe somebody tipped him off and said, "Hey, Peter Harling from Dobber Prospects is in the stands tonight," and maybe he just had a nervous game.
I don't think it works like that. But after, like, near the end of the first period, I'm like, holy smokes, the first period's almost over. I had nothing written down for him. I'm like, he's playing. Like, I literally questioned whether or not he was actually in the roster. And like, for the next like three face-offs, I'm like looking at all the guys lining up. I'm like, okay, yeah, no, there he is. There he is. He's playing.
That's
And
disappointing.
yeah, and the rest of the game was kind of the same. I kept trying to find him, and I was like, oh yeah, there he is, and he's not doing anything. There was a shift in the third period, though, where there were some moments on the power play that I was like, okay, here we go. Yeah, he's got the puck. That's a nice pass. Oh, he's wide open. Give him the puck. And it didn't come. And I'm like, oh, what can you do about that? But if they would have passed it to him, it would have been a gimme. So, it's just one game. It's a very small sample size. He was second line center, like I said. So, they've got some confidence in him. One other player on Laval that I want to talk about is a guy I had like zero file on going into this game. And I was talking to a scout before the game started, and he kind of indicated that this is a player I need to start paying really close attention to. That's Connor Hughes. So no relation to the other Hughes brothers. He's not a fourth Hughes brother, just a coincidence. He's the goalie, and he's got 1% Fantrax roster ship. Montreal signed him this offseason as a free agent out of the Swiss League, but he is Canadian, grew up in Ontario, and he's just been playing overseas. Didn't really have much of a career in Canada, but he's 6'4". He's already 28 years old. So he's not a kid, right? Like, he's kind of long in the tooth, but he's a goalie, so they mature a little bit later sometimes. Tim Thomas is a great example of that. But he's won the starting job in Laval over Jacob Dobes, or Dobes, however you pronounce his name, who's kind of a relatively highly touted prospect. And they're kind of splitting games, but the scout was that I was talking to was like, no, he's their best goalie and it's not close. Well, I mean, he's older, right? So right now he's better. We'll see in 2 years how that ratio pans out at that time after Dobes gets a little bit more development and maturity. But Hughes has got a 5-1-0 record with a 199 goals against average and a 931 save percentage. So I was paying attention to him as well too, right? And he's good. The scout's not wrong. He's very aggressive in challenging shooters. Like he pops out of the crease. When there's a like a pass for a one-timer from the point, he just like pops out of the net and is like from the right corner to the front, like by the post to the front top of the crease all of a sudden. Like he just bam, there goes all your angles, right? He just fills up so much space too. He's really smart. He reads the play and anticipates it very well, right? Like he never seemed to be guessing where the puck was or where it was going or what was happening, where the shot was coming from or who was shooting it. He's very economical in his movements. There was like no rebounds. He controlled the rebounds really well. He's played a really, really confidence inspiring game. And there was, at times I was like, man, are they going to beat this guy or what? And, they did a couple times, but whew, he looked good. However, don't want to rain on my own Connor Hughes love parade here, but yeah, you've got Jacob Fowler coming up in the system, and I'm a believer in him. Now, the last episode we talked about prospects that we were wrong on, and I had a laundry list of goalies that I was excited about that turned out to be nothings. So I'm clearly not very good at projecting goalies, but he's their number one prospect. He's playing in college right now at Boston College. And Hughes is on a 1-year contract. He's already 28 years old, so the chances of him making it to the NHL in any relevant fashion are pretty slim. But for those of you who like to listen to the show and look for deep, deep cuts on the waiver wire, go ahead and give a look into Connor Hughes. Let's look him up, Hughes, just like it sounds. And I'm sure he's available, 1% rostership. And he is signed to an NHL contract playing in Laval. So it's not like he's on an AHL deal. So he should be legally eligible in however your fantasy rules go. So that's my take on all the Laval players that I thought were noteworthy. Jim, any final comments on Laval?
No, I thought you brought up some great players and guys that I know I wanted to know about, and Mayu and Beck and Joshua Roy. And I didn't even know this guy existed, Connor Hughes. 0.931 save percentage in his first season in the American Pro Leagues over there in the AHL. So good diamond in the rough guy to maybe stash if an opportunity becomes available for the Canadians at some point in the near future.
Yeah. I mean, it's only 6 games in, right? So it's early, and as
Sure.
teams will scout him and they'll get a book on him, and I'm sure they'll break him down and find ways to score on him. But right now, he's looking like pretty legit.
Yeah.
The 28 years old thing is the big red flag for me, though.
Yeah. Have you seen a picture of him, by the way? I don't know if you've
No.
seen his Hockey DB picture. He looks like he could, like could be like your our dad or something. He just has that dad face. He doesn't look like a 28-year-old. He looks way older than 28.
Oh no, I didn't see a picture of him.
Yeah.
All right, so the team Laval was playing was the Sens, of course, in Belleville, and well, there are a lot less interesting players on Belleville than there are in Laval. But here are some names for the listeners to look into. Stephen Halliday, he is a center, and he is only 2% Fantrax rostered, so super low. I might be the 2%. He's 6'4", 212. He was a fourth round pick by the Sens, and they recently just signed him out of college after drafting him. So this is his first full season as a pro. He had a cup of coffee at the end of the year. I talked about him on a previous episode too. Like I said, he finished last year in the AHL. He looked really good. He had like 7 points in 9 playoff games, or 9 points in 7 playoff games, or something like that, with Laval at or with Belleville at the end of the season. And he scored his first regular season goal in the game I was at, which was a beauty, by the way. He's got great size, of course, 6'4", 212 pounds. He's got great reach. He skates really well too for a bigger guy, and he's got just a bullet of a shot. He looks very strong, hard on pucks, gives and takes bumps convincingly, right? Like, he just bumps guys off pucks and guys hit him and they go down, and he doesn't. He's not like he's not an overly physically aggressive player, but he has size and he knows how to use it. He's not a menace, but he's effective. I like his upside a lot, Jim. He's a potential NHL player here. I think he needs some incubation time in the American Hockey League. He's only 22 years old. So, you know, he's still on the young side. But I think he's got top five sense prospect written all over him by this time. Then the next time we do the organizational rankings, he was just outside the top 10, I think, 11 or something like that. But he's going to be inside the top five next time we do it. Now, that's a testament of two things, that I think he's very impressive and people are going to start getting pretty hip to his upside, and also the fact that their prospect pool is not very good. There's just not a lot of competition there. Have you heard of Halliday? Any thoughts or comments on him?
So I haven't heard of him. I do have a couple comments, but first I want to know, I see he's from, how do you say it, Ajax or Ajax on Ontario?
Ajax, just like the abrasive
Ajax.
scrub. Yep.
Okay.
Why
All
you
right.
name a team after an abrasive scrub, I'm sure I don't know, but yeah, no, it's Ajax.
Okay, Ajax. Yeah, so the first thing that pops off the page to me, 6'4". And then I'm looking at stats here, and I noticed his first season in the AHL, he got 10 games last year in the regular season. But where I'm intrigued is the playoffs. In 7 games, I assume that was all in one series, 2 goals and 7 assists in that series. So a total of 9 points. So I know people kind of go crazy for that 6'4" center that can, keep guys off pucks, and he can produce in the playoffs. I don't think you saying top five is a stretch there by any means. I mean,
Yeah.
even if the pool was a little bit better, he might be in there.
Yeah. No, it was two series. The first one is a best of three, and then
Okay.
or a best of five. Yeah, best of five, and then best of seven. So three games, and then another four, and they lost to Cleveland. But yeah, I watched a couple of those games, and he was an impact player for them. He was one of their best players,
Playoff
and
producer and big
yeah.
body.
Yeah, I mean, we see players sign out of college or come over from Europe or come out of junior and have a cup of coffee at the end of the season in the American Hockey League, especially, and sometimes the NHL. And then a lot of the times their production's really good and you're excited for their first full season in the American Hockey League and it just doesn't carry over.
Yeah.
And they have a slow season. You're like, well, what the hell, man? And he was like a point a game player in the five games at the end of the season, and now it's five games in, he's got no points. It's like, would the real guy please stand up? You
Right.
have to keep in mind the context. At the end of the season, you've got teams that are out, right?
That's
And
true.
they're just giving them the ice time because it doesn't matter if they win. It's a development league, so they're trying to give him the minutes and see how he does. And he might be scoring a point a game, but how many mistakes is he on the ice for that are in your net too? And then when the season starts and they're a little bit more serious about winning again, he's not getting the deployment that he was. He's not getting the power play time or whatever. So, you always want to look at whatever the context was with those situations. But
Great
yeah,
point. It's good advice.
I'm hip to this guy, and I think you should be too. At 2% Fantrax roster ship, here's a deep cut player that I think has a lot more fantasy upside than Connor Hughes. Just got to be patient for a year or two.
He is now 3% rostered
Oh, there you
as we
go.
speak.
This isn't even a live show. Okay, so we've talked about this guy a few times on the show before too. This might be the last time. Tyler Boucher, former first round 10th overall pick by the Ottawa Senators in 2021. The right winger is 10% Fantrax rostered. First of all, in his defense, injuries have really hurt his development. Poor kid. I go to a lot of Belleville games, Jim, and I can count on one hand the number of times I've seen him play. Probably he's hurt a lot. He has 10 games played this year, though, and has 0 points, playing on a line with Halliday and Philip Daou. He didn't look awful, right? But 0 points in 10 games does look
Not
awful. He's got some.
great.
No, it's not what I'd call great. He's got pretty quick hands. He can move the puck pretty quickly. He's got good control of the puck. He had a number of scoring chances in the game, but didn't cash. The way he looked best, though, was when he's breaking down the ice, he's got the puck on his stick, and he puts his shoulder down and just drives to the net. It never turned into a goal, but there was two times where I was like, look at this guy go. This is great. He's gonna score. Goalie got it. Or, he ran out of ice or whatever. But he's a handful, man. He is a handful. He gets around the ice pretty nicely. But I think basically at this point of his career, with the injuries that he's had and the concerns I have with future injuries, the development time that he's missed and the production that I'm seeing from him right now, if you're part of the 10% that rosters him, hope that the people you like to trade with in your pool aren't listening to this show, and then you should try and trade him and cut your losses. I think it's time to move on from Tyler Boucher, don't you?
I would say so. Former 10th overall pick, and it's almost like he needs the change of scenery type trade, like in real life. 31 games in total with Belleville and 2 goals, 5 for 5 points is pretty rough for a former 10th overall pick.
He got pretty decent deployment in the game I was watching. Like, he was on the second line, man. So
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's going to get much better opportunity than that in another organization.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Anyway, that's enough about my first game. Let's talk about some of your guys. Who do you got?
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app with the code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours.
Sure. Yeah. So, I go to a ton of Flyers games, basically every home game, and I've gotten to watch some pretty exciting players over the last couple of weeks. Let me grab my list up here. I think so. Let's kind of start off with Flyer goaltending, if we can. And they've sort of had this round robin of goalies. Sam Ersin missed some time, so we were able to see a player like Alexei Kolosov, who I think the last time we talked Flyers goalies, it looked like he wasn't going to come over. So, we could talk about him a little bit. So let's kind of start with him and we'll work our way to Sam Ersin. And what I like about Alexei Kolosov, so he's gotten in a couple games with the Flyers. He's actually out right now with an injury. He was supposed to start, I think, over the weekend against Tampa Bay and ended up getting hurt in a morning skate. So Kolosov is probably the most athletic of the Flyers' three goaltenders. I think most goalies today are more cookie cutter. They're all kind of taught to do the same things. The goalie position is not as exciting as it used to be, when we were growing up, not as fun to watch. Kolosov kind of is fun to watch. He's extremely athletic. He kind of bursts all over the crease. Compared to a guy like Fedotov, who is listed 6'7". He's not 6'7", but he's listed 6'7". And, big lanky guy kind of takes forever to get to spots. And he's the opposite of Kolosov. Kolosov is fun to watch, whereas a guy like Fedotov is like, oh my God, I got to watch this guy for 60 minutes. he's just, he, I think the aesthetic of Kolosov has me excited to watch him. I mean, it's his first year, excuse me, his first year here. And I haven't had the opportunity to watch him as much with the Phantoms. The games where he was in with the Flyers were in their rut. They started slow this season, so some of the goals that they gave up weren't necessarily his fault. But I think, and let me just bring up his number here real quick, his save percentage is not all that great, but I don't think it's very indicative of how he's played so far this season. And
You're
so,
right. Goalies aren't as exciting as they used to be. I miss the two-pad stack.
don't you miss that? Yeah, they're just flying through the crease with the legs up in the air, skate blades all over the place.
Just a wall of goalie pads.
Yeah, I always remember that save. I don't know if you paid attention to the Flyers back in the day, but Brian Boucher had a save on Patrick Elias, where he kind of he was the, it was an empty net, and he just his whole body just sprawled and somehow saved it with his glove along the ice, and helmet goes flying off. It's just not the same these days. But
Yeah.
so yeah, Alexei Kolosov. So if you go to look at his numbers, and you can go to FanTrax for these numbers, 3 losses in 3 starts. 3.92 goals against average and a 0.863 save percentage. And it's not all on him. Like I keep saying, very athletic goalie. He's trying to figure it out in the States. I've talked to a lot of people and they've told me that it's a different game in the KHL. It's a completely different game when they come over to the NHL. They have to learn and adjust to the angles. In the NHL, they shoot from everywhere and there's bodies in front of the net constantly. They do whatever they, I mean, it's just different. Whereas the KHL, I don't think it's as much physical in front. This is what I was told anyways, or,
yeah,
you know, they shoot from very specific places on the ice or whatever. So there is an adjustment period and Kolosov's going through that, but he looks good while he's going through it. If that makes sense. Like when I watch him play, you can see that it's there and he's just going to take time to get there. When I watch a guy like Ivan Fedotov, I can't believe they signed him for 2 years when I watch him play. And it's maybe not fair because he's only had a handful of starts since he's been here. He's a little older, 27 years old. I think by now most people know his story. He was going to come over. I think it's 2 or 3 years ago now. He was going to come over to the United States and he ended up getting shipped off to the military, seemingly against his will. So he lost a year of training, of playing hockey, of being in games. Came back last year and had a pretty solid season for his team over in Russia. And then was able to come over towards the end of last season, get in a few games with the Flyers under some crazy circumstances. So I'm not going to hold those games against him. But this year, 4 starts, he started out 0-3 and gave up five goals, just really brutal to watch. I think he had trouble adjusting to shots coming from the outside. He's so tall, it looks like he's trying to look over guys. And while he's looking over, the shots are coming in low. So he was very easy to beat in some of these games. And again, some of it also was the Flyers not playing well in front of him. But some of the goals he was giving up really had you scratching your head there and wondering if he could ever put it together. I mentioned Kolosov being hurt for the game Saturday. Sam Ersson was also hurt. So Fedotov had to start against the Tampa Bay Lightning down in Tampa, where the Flyers have not been good. And then he goes out and wins the game. Flyers win 2-1. Fedotov stops 22 of 23 shots for a 0.957 save percentage. So maybe he does have it in him. Maybe he's starting to turn the corner a little bit and can be the backup the Flyers need going forward. But it's been a rough go so far. So any semblance or sign of positivity is a good thing for Ivan Fedotov. The guy that I really like on the Flyers here, and we touched on him, I think, before the show, and you'll like this one, Peter, is Sam Ersson. So rough start to the season, but as I mentioned a few times now, the Flyers as a whole had a rough start. So when evaluating goalies, it's very easy to judge them by the numbers and say, oh, he's got a sub 900 save percentage. He must be having a rough year. I don't think that's the case for Sam Ersson. I didn't think it was the case last year with Sam Ersson. He's a very, very solid, reliable goaltender, in my opinion. You know what you're going to get in him. I think he has the potential to be a very, very solid 12 to 15 ranked goalie in the NHL at his best. What he's going to benefit from most is having solid backup goalie play behind him. Like, he's going to need his rest. He didn't get that last season and he fell apart. As the Flyers have sort of tightened up this year defensively, Sam Ersson's save percentages have gone up, unsurprisingly. So in his last 5 games started, he was hurt in one of these, but he stopped 8 of 8 shots. Going back to October 29th, Ersson had a shutout against Boston, a 25-save shutout. He had a 2-1 win over St. Louis where he had a 0.952 save percentage. I mentioned the game where he was pulled for injury against Boston. He had a 0.903 save percentage in a loss to Florida, where he allowed 3 goals on 31 shots. And then the win last night against the San Jose Sharks, where should have easily been a shutout. The Flyers sort of let the Sharks back in, maybe hung Ersson out to dry a couple times there, still over a 900 save percentage in that game. And I believe this season is the first season, and I know we're only 15 or so games in, he's played 11, but he does have an over 900 save percentage. And if you go back and look at his stats throughout his career, I don't think there's too many seasons where Ersin has had over a 900 save percentage. And let me just double check that. So if I'm wrong, I can delete it when I edit the show. Yeah, okay. So he's got a couple seasons where he's got over 900, but it's been a while. So first season, over 900 save percentage in North America so far.
All right, so those three goalies, for fantasy purposes, rank them 1, 2, 3. How would you do that?
I'm going Ersin, and a lot of people would go Kolesov, like long term, like dynasty fantasy, they're going Kolesov. I'm going Ersin. I really believe in Sam Ersin. I'm going Ersin, Kolesov, Fedotov. I'm not even sure at this point that, and this could really come back to bite me, but after this contract's up for Fedotov, I'm not sure he's in the NHL after these 2 years. Like, we'll see how it goes, but it doesn't look good for now. And a lot of people out there before the stuff with Kolesov happened over the summer, they would tell you that when the Flyers, if there's ever a time they get ready to go on a cup run, that Kolesov would be the goalie for that. I think Ersin's the guy until Zavrajan comes over.
Interesting. I like the sound of that as a guy that rosters Ersin in my fantasy league, so
There you go. Yeah,
appreciate
really,
that.
really good player. Good head on his shoulders too. He sounds like a leader when you hear him speak in the locker room. He's very accountable. He looks at himself first before he looks at the team, and I appreciate that kind of stuff. Good head on his shoulders.
Right on. Who else has looked good lately?
Yeah, so let's get to. I had a forward on here before we get to our juicy guys. So, Anthony Richard, who may not be well known, former fourth round pick in 2015 of the Nashville Predators. Flyers picked him up over the summer. He played with Boston last season and Montreal before that. He's gotten in a couple games here with the Flyers due to some healthy scratches. Morgan Frost is a healthy scratch. Matvei Michkov was healthy scratch for a couple games, and that was to the benefit of Anthony Richard. Through 3 games so far with the Flyers, Anthony Richard has a goal and an assist, and they're both on pretty plays. Known for his speed, this is a guy that you can, I think, plug into the bottom six in your lineup. He's currently playing on the third line with the Flyers along with Ryan Poehling, and he was with Matvei Michkov last night. And looking at that line before the game, a lot of guys were like, "What the hell is this line?" That ended up being the best line on the ice for the Flyers. So for fantasy purposes, while he's up in the NHL, a sneaky waiver pickup might be Anthony Richard as long as he's up. Like I mentioned, 2 points in 3 games, and the goal was pretty. I think it was a point shot through traffic, got it, snuck its way in. And then last night, a 2-on-1, he sets up Ryan Poehling on a pretty pass, one times into the back of the net. Anthony Richard's a guy I think maybe fantasy players want to look out for. Like I said, for the time being, while he's up here, because I do think that this is probably a career AHL guy, but he's got
Yeah.
speed. And during camp and during preseason, he stuck out. The Flyers gave him a nice long look. And I root for these kind of guys. It's nice to see him get his opportunity, and hopefully he can continue making the most of it.
Yeah, he's 27 now, so
Yeah.
he's had some opportunities. What's his career NHL points? He's only got 5 career NHL games. That's oh, five 27 games, 5 years. Okay, yeah, that's more like it. And 10 points. I was gonna say 10 points in 5 games. Give this
Never put
guy
up.
a job. Wait. Perspective. 27 games, 10 points. That's more like it. All right, yeah. So I think he might be an interesting streaming option. Yeah, for sure. Not a long-term fantasy dynasty guy,
No, this isn't going to be a league winner for you or anything, but if you're in a pinch, or if
though.
you're like me and you got 7 guys on the DL somehow, maybe you're looking, if and you need some goals, maybe Anthony Richard is a short-term pickup for you.
Yeah, he won't break your salary cap either.
That's true. That's true. God knows we're all in cap hell over here. Okay, so now let's get to some of the juicier prospects here. And the guy that I want to talk about first, Emil Andre. This is a guy I've kind of been banging the drum on Emil Andre for what seems like almost 2 years. During camp last season, Emil Andre was my dark horse to make the roster. He did make the roster. He got his cup of coffee and was sent back down. Bobby Brink ended up sticking on the roster over Andre. The Flyers D Corps, it's a crowded place to be on the Flyers defense. And this season, there wasn't really a spot for Emile Andre. They ended up calling him up while Nick Seeler was hurt on their Western Canadian road trip. Didn't get in a game. Finally was called up again when Cam York was injured and is now getting in games. And I during the summer, I said, this is a Kimmo Timonen light. And what's funny is I'm not sure if you follow like any Flyers fans or Flyers Twitter, but, and I don't know if they listen to this podcast, but that blew up. Everyone's comparing him to Kimmo Timonen in Philadelphia. And Kimmo Timonen, I think, is one of the most well-rounded defensemen that I've ever gotten to watch in my lifetime. Just did everything right. And that's kind of what Emile Andre has done so far. The only knock on him so far, having watched him, and John Tortorella made a point to bring this up in a post-game presser, is, and it was a knock on him coming up too, is situational awareness. One of his top abilities is his offensive IQ, his hockey IQ, his offensive instincts. He's a very confident player, so he's going to try to do things that confident players do. You know what I mean? Like maybe try to squeeze passes in where maybe he shouldn't at a time where he shouldn't. And he's done that a couple times. But there's also been a couple plays where he's gotten away with that. So it's the give and take, I guess, with the young player. And he's going to learn to figure out when to make those types of decisions at certain points in the game, which is fine. Because for me, I want confident players to be confident. I want them to play their style, but at the same time, you don't want it to hurt the team either. So very good situational awareness. Obviously, there's a couple knocks that we mentioned. Playing in the NHL now, I mentioned he's been playing with the Flyers. It's a faster league than the AHL, where he's been for the last year and a couple games now. I mentioned Tortorella said there were a couple plays specifically where he'll have to learn to make certain passes. Extremely confident player, makes confident decisions. Seems risky as long as they work out, but you're okay with it if they do work out. Smaller defenseman, his ability to read the game in his position is one of his strengths. And I think that's huge for a smaller player, right? You need to make sure you're in the right position all over the ice, especially if you're not one of the fastest guys either, which he's not. So very smart player, very poised. His offensive instincts, and I'll include his power play prowess in this too, because last night is, I think, what maybe a lot of fans and scouts and, you know, media kind of saw last night and maybe like gave him the oohs and ahs. His vision is, and his passing make him an ideal quarterback on a power play. In my opinion, he's the perfect blue line facilitator. Andre has the ability to slow the game down or speed it up. And that's one of my most favorite intangible attributes about a player. To me, that's when you see a player who knows how to play fast, slow the game down, to me, that oozes confidence because now he's in control. Like, you guys are going to play at the speed that I want to play. And he was doing that last night as a 22-year-old. I have to look up how many games he's been in the NHL. But that kind of stuff gets me excited when I see a guy say, okay, this is how we're going to play. This is the speed we're going to play at. Everyone chill out. So he's played in 12 games in the NHL now. While he's not, you know, juicing up the score sheet, he's got 2 assists in the 12 games. He's making an impact all over the ice. Last night he had a pretty, I'm not even sure if he got credit for an assist. There was a pretty passing play on the Flyers power play. It was a tic-tac-toe play. He might have had like if there was credit for a third or fourth assist, he was the third or fourth assist. Like, that's how many passes took place, like bang, bang, bang. And they scored, and he was just exciting for me to watch in that sense, the way he's facilitating the puck from left to right at his age. Like, you know he can do that, but I don't think we expect to see it instantly in the NHL. So to me, you can tell that has me excited.
Yeah, I've seen him do those things at the international level. The U18s and World Juniors, and I'm like, wow, man, that's really impressive. But, mm-hmm. you know, you're undersized. You're going to be able to make that fly at the NHL level. And now here we are today, and you're telling me he's doing it. that's like the best case scenario for what I thought this could be. And yeah, he carries the puck up the ice with confidence and authority, doesn't he?
That he
Like,
does.
and like he's a commanding presence
You
on
said
the
it, yep.
ice. Yeah, like he dictates the pace and the play, and it looks really good doing it.
He does. You can see the confidence, right? And
Yeah.
like you said, he dictates play. And to me, those are some of the most fun players to watch. But it's there's going to be peaks and valleys. So as everyone gets excited, especially Flyers fans get excited for Emil Andre, like, 'cause this is a guy that we've been watching for a while now, right? You brought up his days with in juniors and playing with Sweden. Like, there's going to be peaks and valleys. So I'm trying to temper my own expectations, right? Like, not everyone's going to be Bobby Orr. So I have to,
No one's
we
gonna be
got,
Bobby Orr.
no one can be. So we got to be critical a little bit, and temper expectations, right? Like, this is a former second round pick, 54 overall in the 2020 draft. So he's been in the system for a while. Before I get to weaknesses, one more thing that I like about him, and John Tortorella made a point to mention it as well. He gets out of the zone quick. Like, the Flyers have the way that they play and the way that they, create offense is quick strike and transition. It's where they struggled in the beginning of this year. I think they got away from that. Their 5-on-5 play has been very subpar. Andre has been like an injection of life, 5-on-5. As soon as he gets the puck in the D zone, he's not looking to, kind of saucer it back and forth back there. He's looking to get out. And the Flyers have some forwards that are just waiting for that pass. I think Michkov had a goal like that last night. There was a stretch pass through the neutral zone, and bang, it was a goal. Andre is one of those defensemen. Once he gets possession in the D zone, he's not looking to rag the puck around. It's let's get out. And I love that. So just wanted to add that in real quick. But it's not all rainbows and butterflies with Andre. So I don't want to oversell him. I mentioned maybe temper expectations a little bit. Let's talk about his shot. His shot leaves a little bit to be desired. I think he can get it through to goal. I think he can create his own shooting lanes as well. But I still see him as more of a facilitator. He doesn't have the strongest shot, so I think if he worked on his shot and worked on, getting it through more often, he would be even more dangerous. Because I think once the league catches on that he's going to be more of a facilitator, you can take away his passes and force him to shoot, kind of thing. So if there's something that he can work on, it would be getting his shot through to goal more. And then it's almost unfair to say this, but his size, right? Like, I feel like, how can you hold someone's physical attributes against them? It's not like he's small, because he's pretty bulky, but he's, 5'9". So he plays like a pit bull on the ice. You mentioned his tenacity, I think. But the problem with that is when he meets another guy with the same tenacity and the same edge to him, that's bigger, that almost cancels that out, right? So I haven't had the opportunity to see him much around his own goal and play in corners for an extended time. Like, for example, last night they played the San Jose Sharks, who, no disrespect to the Sharks, but they're a young team and they're bottom of the league right there with the Flyers. So they were coming off a second game of a back-to-back. So for long stretches of the games, a lot of players on the Flyers looked really good, including Emil Andre. So one thing I want to watch for more, I want to see him more in the corners and around the goal and see how he handles that against bigger, stronger men in the NHL. Okay. And we can, did you have
Yeah,
anything you
who?
wanted to add in on Andre before we move on?
No, I chimed in my 2 cents. Who do you got next?
Okay. Last but not least here. And I almost feel bad bringing up Jamie Drysdale, who is 2 months younger than Emil Andre. Can you believe that? Emil Andre has been in the Flyers system for a
Really?
while. I mentioned drafted in 2020. Jamie Drysdale was a former sixth overall pick in 2020. So first round pick, sixth overall for Drysdale. Emil Andre was 54th overall, second round in the same draft. And yet Drysdale's 2 months younger and he's been in the NHL since his draft season. He's got 162 NHL games under his belt. We all know about the versatility issues. He's been injured year in and year out, it seems like, unfortunately. He's officially a project player, in my opinion, Jamie Drysdale. So it's easy to look at his numbers this year. He's minus 10. And he's been not great, 5-on-5, and saying not great is putting it nicely, I think. 3 points in 15 games. I see Jamie Drysdale still as a power play specialist. I still see him as a top 4D. But this season, he's coming off off-season surgery. I think it was hernia surgery or sports hernia surgery, which takes NHL guys a little bit to get back to normal there. So what I was expecting for Drysdale this year was a slow start. He's also learning a new system in Philadelphia. It's a tougher system to learn how to play, from what I've heard, than what he was playing in Anaheim in the past. Now, if you got to watch Anaheim Duck games while Jamie Drysdale was there, offensively, it looked like he had free rein. To me, he looked like a dynamic hockey player at times. So I think a lot of people, especially Flyers fans, or maybe even fantasy players, were expecting to see that this year with the Flyers, you know, getting the PP1 time with Michkov and Tippett and Couturier and Konechny and all those guys, and, you know, hitting the ground running 5v5. You know, if he's available in your league, in a dynasty league, whether he's a free agent or if this is a buy low guy, I think you should take the chance and invest in him, especially now that you can keep him on your IR for a bit. I don't know if it's a salary cap league or whatnot, but this is a guy where if he's under contract or whatever in your league, you can stash him. And I wholeheartedly believe that this will be a defenseman, you know, come maybe towards the end of the season next year, will be more of the guy that, you know, was drafted sixth overall. Like, let's remember, I think this in his second season, he put up 32 points, 28 assists as, I don't know, what was he, a 19, 20-year-old? Like, this is a kid still. I mentioned Emile Andre, he's got 12 games under his belt, same age as Drysdale. Drysdale's got 162. I think it's easy to be out on a guy who's been in the league for 4 or 5 years, but you got to remember he's 22, learning a new system, getting over some injuries. Yeah, watching him, like I mentioned, watching him live, you can see the skill is there. The kid can flat out skate. He's probably the best skater on the Flyers, but you can see that he's just not quite right yet. He's getting beat in the spots that he shouldn't be beat. And maybe that's part of learning the system. Maybe that's part of, you know, getting over the injury where he's maybe just a step off. He's not there yet. Yeah. So the Flyers said he's banged up, which, you know, usually you can play through. I think he's banged up, but they're also maybe kind of giving him a break because they have a guy like Emile Andre that can that stepped into the lineup and has taken over power play one duties. And they have a player like Igor Zamula who can slide in on the bottom pair and a veteran like Eric Johnson. So there's no rush with Jamie Drysdale. At least there shouldn't be. Like, if the best thing for him would be for them to take their time and help him develop into the player that he will be if everything pans out correctly for him.
Yeah, you know, there's a bunch of defensemen. You never know if they're going to pan out.
Dante Fabbro is a good example. He was just picked up on waivers, but, you know, in his draft year, he was a top draft prospect. He was a high pedigree profile player, and he struggled. I don't think he's had the same sort of injuries that Drysdale's had, and you take into consideration the injury impact on his development, and if those are in the past, here's the thing. If his injuries are in the past and he can maintain a relative level of good health and fitness, then I still believe in the player, and I think he can catch up and realize the vast majority of the potential that we all had for him as a draft prospect.
Sure.
But if the injuries just keep happening, if they're lingering and chronic, then it'll never happen potentially, right? So
yeah,
you never know with the extent of the injuries and how bad a player is hurt and how many injuries he has and, you know, how chronic they are and you know, all those things. But I kind of agree with you at this point. I think he's a project player now. You know, he's gone from prospect to project. He's, what is he, 21 now? 22?
22, yep, 22.
Right. So, you know, we're looking for him to start taking significant steps forward, not
be stagnant or even taking steps back, which is
Right.
kind of like what we're seeing right now. So
That's where the disappointment will come in. Yep.
I'm also with you though. I'm not writing him off. I think this might be a gamble as a buy low opportunity if you're looking at acquiring stock in Drysdale, if you've got someone who's fed up of waiting, or doesn't want to wait any longer, just given up on him.
Yeah.
You could get a value out of him if you're patient. I wouldn't pay the freight that you would have had to have paid for him 2 years ago, or even last year. Like, he was traded for Cutter Gauthier, so I wouldn't do that kind of a trade in a fantasy league. I think his value has fallen below that, but it can come back, so we'll see.
Yeah, like if you can toss, I mean, depending on how many rounds you have in your draft, if you can toss a fourth or fifth round pick at a guy to take a waiver on Jamie Drysdale, like I do believe like he's got the tools, and the Flyers have a coach in Brad Shaw who has completely changed a defenseman like Rasmus Ristolainen, who is no longer really relevant in a fantasy aspect, but. Was an offensive, a big right-handed offensive defenseman in Buffalo, and is now one of the better stay-at-home defensemen for the Flyers. So I'm hoping, something similar like that can happen to Drysdale now that a guy like Brad Shaw has his hands on him.
Yeah, and a lot of players get drafted into the NHL under a certain label, right? Like, offensive forward, franchise forward, number one defenseman. And then, 4 or 5 years later, that's not happening. They're not turning into that player, and they never will. But they reinvent themselves and can iron out a really nice NHL career in another role, at another level or capacity. So while he might not pan out to be a number one fantasy stud offensive defenseman, he still could carve himself out a nice long NHL career
Oh yeah.
as a middle of the pack kind of guy.
Yeah. And just as an example, last year when the Flyers traded for him, I'm thinking, okay, this could potentially be, a complimentary guy on the Flyers top pair. But, after seeing what he's going through, I'm like, you know what? Maybe take some of the pressure off of him. And, there's a lot of guys that play PP1 or PP2 and are a third pair D. Take the stress away from him and let him kind of slowly develop into the player that you want him to be, or at very worst, you need those third pair D that can provide offense on the power play.
For sure.
So,
All
but
right,
that, yep.
we're running long. I got two more guys I want to talk about from an OHL game I went to in
Cool.
Kingston. Brampton came through, and I was really looking forward to this game, Jim. Let me tell you, France are hot right now. They're on a winning streak. Brampton has the potential first overall pick in Porter Marton. We talked about him just recently on an episode two with an early look at the 25 draft class. Brampton played the night before this game up in Ottawa, and Marton picked up a one-game suspension, so I missed him. Didn't
No.
play in the game I was at. And on top of that, their other really relevant draft prospect is goalie Jack Ivankovic. He was the backup in this game. So,
You picked a good one.
yeah, I didn't get to see either of the guys I wanted to see,
Didn't
but
know
it
you
was,
were coming, man. If you let them
yeah.
know, they would have started them for you.
The Harling factor. It wasn't a complete write-off, though. It wasn't a total waste of time. They still like Brampton's a good team, and they had a couple other players that were worth watching, and we'll talk about those guys. So first one is Carson Rakoff, right wing, 15% Fantrax owned. He's 6'2", 201 pound, drafted by Seattle Kraken in 2023 with a second round pick, 50th overall. He's the best player in this game, and it didn't even look like he was trying, man. He plays a really sleepy, casual game. There is like no panic thresholds, not even a sense of urgency when you just watch him play. He's just out there skating around. He gets around the ice really well, right? For a guy that's 6'2", 200 pounds, mobility is not a problem with him. And he was always in good position, right? He didn't have to skate hard. He was just already there, which is really impressive.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he's a lackadaisical, like an Alexei Kovalev kind of player. Like, I'm not going to try until you give me the puck. That's not the case at all. He's very effective defensively. He's playing on both their penalty kill one and their power play one, and getting a lot of ice time. And France had a whole bunch of penalties in this game too. So, they kept it wasn't just the way the lines rolled when they got the penalty. Like, no, he's their go-to offensive penalty killer. What he is, though, is he's a shooter. This kid can shoot. He had 50 goals last year. He's got a lethal shot, and he only needs like the splittest of seconds to unleash it, right? Like, if the puck comes anywhere, he's 6'1", or sorry, 6'2", with a huge reach. Like, if the puck comes anywhere near, he can just whiz it on the goal. And he caught the goalie off guard a couple of times with that skill as well. So he's like NHL level shooting and hockey sense is kind of what I saw from him in this game. I've seen him before a couple of times too. Concern I have with him is his pace and it translating to the NHL. Like, I'm talking about, he looks really casual out there. Well, I mean, he processes and plays the game really smart, and I think he's just ahead of the play so much at the OHL level, and he's developing this lackadaisical sort of play to his game. And when he gets to the pro level and plays in the American Hockey League next year, I really wonder how that's going to fly, like how that's going
Interesting.
to look and how that's going to work. And then it ramps up like another, it goes from like 10 to 11 when you get to the NHL. Like, it just goes up a whole nother notch, right? So, while it's a paradox, one of the things I really like about this player is his ability to process the pace of the game and his hockey sense. And yet I'm concerned about that at the higher level. I'm not sure if I'm reading this right, or I need to watch him more, or if that's a concern, or if I'm reading it wrong, but I couldn't stop thinking about that while I was watching him. He looked really good at Canada at the World Juniors last year. He had 4 points in five games. So there's something I'm looking forward to, is seeing how he plays at the World Juniors. I'm assuming he's going to make the roster for Canada again this year as a returning player, and probably have a prominent role with them. I could be wrong. Like, he's only a second round pick, so he's not like a super pedigree kind of guy. But the World Junior pace is a lot faster and a lot more up tempo than a regular season OHL game in November. Last year, he did score 52 goals in Kitchener and only 9 goals so far this year. It puts him way off his pace at 38 goals is what he's on pace for this season. But he's got 29 points in 16 games. So, I say he's a shooter and he likes to shoot a lot, but he's developing a more well-rounded game and playmaking skills. And he's playing with, not in this game that I saw, but he's playing with Porter Marton too. So that's very interesting. I really like his NHL upside. And I think his 15% Fantrax roster ship, there's a lot of opportunity here that people are sleeping on. Jim, do you have any thoughts on Carson Rakoff?
No, but I found what you said really interesting about his pace of play and looking lackadaisical, and maybe it's due to him being, ahead of the play. And it made me wonder, is it possible, like, is he being overcooked in the OHL maybe? Like, maybe he's ready for the jump, but he's kind of stuck in this league. Not that he's too good for it, but could it be impacting his development? Not being in a league like the AHL now, like is he ready to make the jump mentally? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I don't think, we always hear scouts say you never hurt a player by sending him back to junior for another year of development, even if he's too good for that league. It's not going to be detrimental to him. And I fundamentally I agree with that. It's not a concern that I think this is retarding his development. I'm having difficulty pinpointing it in a projection level, right? Because he seems to be way ahead of the play. Like, he's seeing it as it's happening, and he's like, okay, I just got to go over here now. And then, boop, there the puck comes to him, right? Like, he doesn't have to hurry over there. Well, when you get to higher level, all those guys process the game at that speed, right? Like, everybody does. And they're all fast and they're all big. And I'm not saying that he's not a fast skater. He just looked really casual out there.
And this is kind of what I mean. And that's the way you just put that was perfect. Like he can almost predict what's going to happen before it happens in this league. So when he makes the jump, will he still have that same mindset? And like you're saying, like, is that going to affect him? Because he's going to have to relearn, the speed of the game and obviously the professional league. That's really interesting to me. That's something I'll keep it. I never really thought about that before until you just described what you did there. That was a really interesting point you brought up.
Well, I guess that's the point of the American Hockey League, right? Like you go from playing in junior to the pro level. The AHL is a really nice segue to the NHL, and that's the point, right? Like everyone there is the best player from their junior team. And then everyone in the NHL is their best player from the American Hockey League team. Like it's the tip of the pyramid. And as you move up, it weeds out players who are really good, but not good enough, not great. So I'm not saying where I think Carson Rakoff fits in the pyramid, if where he peaks out at the OHL or the AHL or the NHL level. I see a lot of NHL skill and potential in his game. I'm just really curious about that. I wouldn't even say it's a concern, because I think he's smart enough to process the play and play there. I'm just really curious to see what his like. Does he play with a lot more sense of
Intensity.
urgency? Yeah, when he gets there.
So, I know we're tight on time, so I'll throw this out there quick, but the guy that comes to mind for me is a Cutter Gauthier, Peter. Like watching him in college. Like he wasn't, to me, when I watched him, he wasn't the fastest guy. He wasn't the, didn't look like the most motivated guy, but found himself on the score sheet more often than not, right? And now we're
Right.
seeing him with Anaheim, and it's like he's playing the same way as he did in college and hasn't really made the adjustment yet. So that point
Yeah.
you brought up was really, really interesting.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eye on that and see how it pans out. One last guy, and this is going to be short notes. Luke Misa, center, 5% Fantrax rostered. We talked about him a couple times last season. It was his draft year. He was drafted in the fifth round by Calgary Flames. He's a 5'10, 176, and he is the older brother of Michael Misa, who's a potential first round pick in the draft this year and has the exceptional status situation. So Luke Misa is a little bit on the small, and he's kind of a passive player too. He uses his speed and his smarts to intercept passes, and he's pretty good at it as well. He's got really great vision, but I'm watching him out there and I'm thinking, okay, so you're only 5'10 and 176. It's not impossible for you to make the NHL. There's a bunch of guys that size that are in or have played in the NHL. But you gotta be like really elite at something, right? And it's not his puck skills or his shot or his playmaking. Those are all very good, but I don't think they're NHL level. And then you put a minus against him for the size, and I'm just not seeing a scenario where I think he makes it. He's a nice player, he's a good player, but I'm just not seeing a lot of NHL potential in him. So I think a 5% Fantrax rostership is probably a pretty good number. Drafting him in with a fifth round pick in the NHL or in a dynasty league, I think that's fine too. If you're willing to hold on to him, if you have a generous number of prospect roster spots, sure, hold on to him. Give him a year or two and see how he progresses and see how he does at the American Hockey League level. Looks like a tweener to me, more than an NHLer. Kind of like Glenn Gauden is my poster boy for the tweeners. Really good at junior level. Also pretty good at the American Hockey League level. Just can't crack it at the NHL level and become fantasy relevant. So that's my take on Misa.
Yeah, and if you're steering clear and for fantasy purposes, I will follow you.
Right. Well, I think we're running over time here, Jim. So let's wrap it up. Thanks everyone for sticking it out and listening to Dogger Prospects Report number 81 for feedback on the show or to chat with us. Follow us on Twitter at DPR underscore show. I'm at Farling. Victor is at Victor Nuno 12. And Jim is at Jim IKEHW. Don't forget to follow HockeyPodNet. There's a bunch of good shows on there. And wherever you're listening to us, if you don't already, subscribe, like, five-star review, share the show. Thanks for listening, everyone. Keep your stick on the ice.